No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. On the line with me is my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and also from the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. How you doing tonight, Seth? How's everything going?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. We're just a couple of weeks away from training camp, and that's when we get some real stories. Now, we have today, well, I guess the biggest thing is the All or Nothing show. This is our All or Nothing show. We're talking about All or Nothing. We're going to talk about the Amazon series, All or Nothing, the 8-episode series by NFL Films through Amazon. If you're a Cardinals fan or if you're an NFL fan, you've probably seen it promoted the heck out of it. NFL's really, really tried to push that and see what kind of success they get. So the question is, how soon did it take you to watch all 8 episodes?
We got them over, my wife and I. I think it was 3 days. Might have been 4. I can't remember. We put off the last episode a couple days. So, but yeah, it was either 3 or 4 days. It was a quick binge. I did a lot of note taking throughout. As you know, being an editor of a Cardinals site, there are expectations, and one of those expectations is to pay attention to things. So, I did a lot of note taking to make sure that I didn't miss too much. But there was some rewinding involved and things of that nature, but we got it over in 3 to 4 days. And, the first 7 episodes were fantastic television. That's for sure.
They were. See, I was driving out of town the night, so Thursday night. I wish, and then I saw on Twitter that people it was already live, and I was like, "Duh!" So I got Friday. I think it took me 2 days. Maybe I watched the last episode. I think it was on Sunday, so it took me like 2.5 days to get through all of them. But yes, I took copious notes, and mostly the one thing that was. One, I can remember some of the things, but which episode does it go to? That's the one thing. When you binge watch, you're like, which episode was that? Because there was so much good stuff. It was fantastic, and my goodness, I wish there were 8 more episodes, and I wish they'd done a show basically on each. They'd done an episode on each on each week. It would have been fantastic, I think.
Right. And that's the whole thing is like, obviously we're not comparing this to Game of Thrones in terms of impact, social impact, but Game of Thrones has a TV show about it on HBO every, Monday night after the Sunday night episode,
doing what we're doing right now. Only every week
and breaking down one episode, and they do it for, I think it's like 30 to 45 minutes an episode. So yeah, like we could have done a podcast, an episode type thing. But we'll get through there was a lot of high points and there was a lot of filler stuff, but I see, I enjoyed the filler aspect of the show a lot because I think a lot of times in the NFL, we especially don't look at these guys as human beings. We look at them as football players, kind of robots. Yes. And we forget about the personal impact at home. I saw somebody get upset, in fact, after episode 8 with David Johnson's lovely fiance at the time, now wife, that she said, oh, great. Now, after the Carolina game, she said, oh, great. Now you can help plan the wedding. And people were upset about that. Like they're humans. Like that's how – that's their thought process. Like, oh, good. Now you can, you can do something else because we need to get your mind off the fact that you just got run roughshod over in the biggest game of all of your lives. So,
and I just talked to Carson Palmer on a conference call the other day. He's getting ready to do this golf tournament in Lake Tahoe. He does every year. And, you know, he loves football, and football is his job, and he works his tail off. But he says he can't wait to get to the off season because, you know, you get to be with the family, you get to play rounds of golf because, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time to play golf during the regular season. And that's that sort of thing. So, yeah, I really did enjoy that. I wish there would have been more. We saw some key guys, you know, David Johnson was one. We saw Patrick Peterson. We saw Tyrann Mathieu. But I would have loved to have seen more of that from the players. So let's go ahead and get started. We're going to kind of go episode by episode. What we liked, what were things that we caught that caught our eye? What are things that we missed? You know, what were the funny points? What were the bad points? Things that we wish they would have done that we didn't need. And in this, I'm going to point out at least there's one part in the show where there's just, it's just factually incorrect. And we'll talk about it when we get to that point. So we're going to go ahead and get started, but I wanted to let you listeners know that this edition, this show is brought to you by our new partner, Fan Essentials. So how would you like to get all of your Cardinals or favorite NFL teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? To do that, check out fanessentials.net, and all you got to do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your front door. They find the gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed with some amazing gear, and I'm actually waiting for mine this month. It makes a great gift idea to treat yourself or for any sports fans. Prices start at just $34.99. Visit fanessentials.net and use this promo code CRED for our listeners, Rise Up CRED listeners. So use the promo code CRED at checkout for 30% off your first month, and visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. And we've actually got a real special offer for one lucky listener of the show. A free month of, so basically you get a free fan box of gear. Here's how it works. What you got to do? Tweet a picture of your best piece of Cardinals gear. Tweet it to the show account, Rise Up CRED, or post it to our Facebook page, which you can also find, Rise Up CRED. The best one will get a shout-out on our next show and a free month of Fan Essentials gear. So do that. Test it out. Use the promo code. Get 30% off, and that's fanessentials.net. So let's go ahead and get started with All or Nothing. And we're going to talk about Episode 1. Episode 1 had some good things, and really – is it kind of foreshadows one of the interesting things. Obviously, it starts with Bruce Arians going on an F-bomb tirade there at the beginning, talking about it's about putting a ring on your finger. Then it flashes back to Carson Palmer's ACL injury. That, one, it really throws in your face the type of guy Bruce Arians is in the locker room. And you told me this, and my son actually started watching it before I did, and he had turned on them and like, no, you have to watch the edited version, son. And you said, doesn't matter. It's like, if there's kids in the room, don't let them watch it. And yeah, the language was horrific, but that's football.
Yeah, that's football. That's, I mean, you know, we talk about this on our draft show a lot. You know, we all have sources, you know, we make fun of it and stuff like that, but we all have some sources and things of that nature. And a lot of it, you know, people don't want to know how the sausage is made of the NFL in reality. Like, you know, you as somebody that's covered the team at the facility, at the stadium pre and post game, you know, you've been up close and seen how things happen. But there are, I would say you get what, about a 10 to 15% access to the team. And the other, you know, 85% is still behind closed doors that people just don't know what happens.
And what I see, what we hear in the media, it's canned. You don't get the emotion. You know, BA's in the locker room swearing at people, saying this and that. And then they come out and they've got their media, they got the media relations guide next to them. So it's all prepared. They know what message they're sending. So, yeah, I mean, that's what was kind of cool about this is you see Bruce Arians as a character which is fun. And one of the interesting things is, you know, he kind of sets it off the back, and we didn't find out until episode three why it was, but he talks about, and we'll get to that when we talk about episode three, but he makes a big deal about parking. and we'll find out more about that when he gets to episode three. Gripping, and this was leaked ahead of time. Draft day. This is amazing, especially considering the way, and I can go back, and the story is in the second round, the Cardinals were on the phone with Amir Abdul. If you've watched the show, you pay attention to social media, you've seen this story go around. They're on the phone with Amir Abdul. The pick before, they're on the phone with him, the running back out of Nebraska. They were going to pick him. Steve Keim was elated. He was so excited. They were thrilled about him from the combine. They were ready for that pick. And then when they're on the phone with him, Detroit calls. And they pick Abdul, the pick before the Cardinals. And they are bombed. And so they pick Marcus Golden instead. They get to the third round. That's when they draft David Johnson. And what's interesting is kind of the dialogue that goes on is it almost looks like that, you know, Michael Bidwell and Steve Keim had to be sold on the pick, that Arians liked him. And we find out later, Stump Mitchell loved him. So, you know, David Johnson, especially the way they came out after day two of the draft. And I was there for the post-draft presser. They were raving about Marcus Golden and they were raving about David Johnson. But what they did not, they didn't make it clear at all. You can see how very disappointed they didn't get Abdul and how that would have worked out. And it's interesting for me because they didn't go pass rusher first round because, you know, whether it was what's his name or anyone, whether it was Shane Ray, whether it was Bud Dupree that they really wanted. They weren't going to go with a pass rusher in the second round when everyone considered that it was a done deal, that it was going to happen. But they weren't gonna. So, you know, what would have happened if they drafted, if they gone with DJ Humphreys, then they get Amir Abdul. When do they draft? And it actually worked out pretty well. They really like Golden and David Johnson. I mean, they're talking about him like he's, I mean, Stump Mitchell mentions it later. He thinks he should be a Hall of Famer.
Right. And that was interesting because the conversation looked like it was, do we really, I mean, is he worth the pick? Right? Like, that's what it kind of looked like. Like, is this a reach?
Right.
And I love the pick after it happened. So I didn't care, but yeah. It was an interesting inside look at the reality of the draft doesn't always turn out the way you want it to. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes you get saved from yourself if you're a football team. And so I think we saw that with the Arizona Cardinals because, I'm not sure if anybody takes Marcus Golden before the Cardinals' third-round pick. But we didn't have to worry about it, and then we didn't have to worry about – and it's not that Amir Abdul is a bad player at all. It's just that – I think that David Johnson's going to be the better player in the long run, and the Cardinals were able to get that player. So that, I thought, was the way it should have gone down, and it worked out.
And then it wasn't the guy that they originally wanted. That's the fun thing about this is, you know, I had kind of pegged, you know, based on what Bruce Arians had said before the draft, he was looking for a bigger back who's got speed. And, you know, looking at combine numbers, you know, picked out, oh, look, David Johnson, 6'1", 224 pounds. Whoa, sub 4.5 speed. That's kind of what you want. That's one of the more and interesting fact about that particular show. That was filmed by the Cardinals film crew. So this was before All or Nothing was even born. So even the thought of doing All or Nothing, they had the foresight ahead of time to think, hey, I think we might try to do something, and so let's put cameras in the draft room. That's unheard of to see them, especially to reveal that they didn't get the guy that they wanted. That's unheard of. What else stuck out for you? What else stuck out for you there in that very first episode? I mean, kind of the things I go down, you get briefly Larry Fitzgerald talking to Troy Aikman on this new position, Palmer and his injury. You get you get the introduction to the bucket game for the quarterbacks. There's a couple of funny moments. Michael Bidwell explains how his family got to purchase the Cardinals. What else? Oh, and there was a comment about David Johnson, and there was his engagement and that kind of story there. Chris Johnson. And then they have then you've got the Bears game. You got Fitz, and they show off the family days. And really, it was kind of episode one was different than kind of the rest for me, because it was really introducing a bunch of things, and it wasn't as much about the Cardinals season as it was kind of introducing a lot of different characters.
Yeah, and I liked seeing kind of Chris Johnson talking to Steve Keim's son.
That was hilarious.
Brady Keim, asking him.
Why do you have gold teeth?
Yeah, why do you have gold teeth? I like that. Was it the first episode? Now, like you said, it's all kind of blending together. But was it the first episode where Arians talked about David Johnson and having him ready to be the workhorse by Thanksgiving?
I think that was episode one. And that's kind of interesting is, that's kind of the thing they do about rookies. They want them to be able to contribute by Thanksgiving. But it's really kind of prescient in a way to say, I think he can be a bell cow by Thanksgiving. It was a week later, and he became the starter after that. It was December. And even that was when they had two guys in front of Johnson and Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington to start the year. They really brought, and they intended on bringing him along very slowly.
Yeah, and they were able to, for the most part. I mean, I know he had some big moments over the, first, what was it, about eight games or such, but he really didn't. I mean, I'm going back and looking. I mean, we're talking no carries in the regular season opener. He got the one catch, five carries against the Bears, seven carries in game three. I can't remember off the top of my head who that was.
The Rams. That
was first San Francisco
game. No, San Francisco, yeah.
And then, I mean, we're talking until he had his first start on 12-6. I mean, carries-wise, we're talking 10, 20, 30, 35 carries. I mean, that's it. That's all he got. So, it was exactly kind of what they wanted and expected from him, and they were able to get it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Now, there were a couple of funny moments. In fact, episode one, I think for me, had the most funny moments of it. One was, for me, I pointed out, is the play that when David Johnson scored that touchdown in the season opener. He was given that basically that one play and that pass play in that crucial situation. Drew Stanton comes out to the field and tells Palmer, say, hey, remember to tell, Dave's going to be in the game. Remind Dave he needs to catch the ball, hold on to the ball, and don't go out of bounds. And then Palmer turns and said, wait, who's Dave? Who? David Johnson, the rookie. Oh, okay.
Well, and the funny thing is that's a little bit of like insight into the NBA. Like a guy like Carson Palmer, and this sounds elitist, but a guy like Carson Palmer doesn't have time to get to know David Johnson.
Well, not yet. Well, no.
Through the preseason and into the first game. And so that's, that's why Drew knew him, knew of him, knew what to expect of him. But Carson's like, wait, who? Like, where's Andre? Where's Chris? What are we doing? So, but for me, episode two, I thought was the funniest episode of the bunch. I really enjoyed episode two and kind of getting into everything that was the setting up kind of for the season. I felt like it got into the meat of it. And then you got to see the adversity that the Cardinals would go through. David Johnson fumbling early in that St. Louis game and kind of how everything just kind of went against them in terms of what they wanted to do. And what happened, you saw, you know, you really saw Bruce Arians and how he tries to deal with each player individually and how he knows what a player can and can't take. For instance, the Carson Palmer aspect of it, and somebody brought this up to me, you know, they didn't really go after him too much, right? Like it was a question of Carson, like, hey, what were you thinking there? But that was the extent of it. It wasn't like, you know, something like he did with other players where he would kind of ride them incessantly because, you know, as we've talked about before, he understands his players and what they can take in terms of criticism. And, you know, one thing that we have heard before about Carson Palmer is that he can kind of get down on himself. And so I think you see that with how Bruce Arians treats him as opposed to how he was treating other players in the same vein.
And the one thing, I know how Bruce deals with quarterbacks. When there's a bad throw, he wants an explanation as to why. And if his quarterback can do that, and it seems that Bruce can excuses throws that are an okay to throw that was just a badly thrown, it was misthrown, or a good play was made. What he goes off on is the wrong read. And there are really a couple of interceptions they show in there that were the issue. One was the Pittsburgh, we'll get to that, the Steelers game. Another was one of the interceptions against the Packers. And then the other one was the first interception against the Panthers in the NFC Championship games. Those were inexcusable throws. They weren't just throws that he was making to the right read, but just did throw wrong or you know, underthrew it, overthrew it. Something happened wrong. It was just, that was stupid. You had Fitz open, wide open over here. It's kind of interesting how he goes about that. He as long as they're making the right read and putting the ball into the, you know, to the receiver that he's supposed to, if it's executed or if there's an interception, he'll excuse that because then that wasn't a mental error.
Right. And so, you know, we saw that on episode 2. And then we kind of went to off the field stuff. And I thought that was interesting. I thought it was very interesting. And it made the offseason by the Cardinals even more interesting in how tight they portrayed, and it seemed as though the defensive backs were. Jerrod Powers, obviously, you have Tyrann Mathieu and Rashad Johnson and Patrick Peterson and kind of their relationship together and what they, you know, what they saw as their, what, you know, what they see out there, their kind of brotherly aspect of it and how they make fun of each other and things of that nature. And I think we saw into that a little bit and it made me kind of raise my eyebrows at the offseason moves. 'Cause all of a sudden the question is, all right, like can this new group, can a Tyvon Branch, you know, and then obviously the rookies, and we didn't see Justin Bethel as much in that grouping, but can those guys kind of develop the camaraderie? Because, you know, as the season went along and as Tyrann went down and Jerrod went down, we saw the breakdowns on the back end. And so now the question, you know, to me was, okay, was that because of a lack of camaraderie, or was that just because of injuries and it was an issue in that nature?
And, you know, really kind of crack open the mind. What did we hear all last year? And I even saw this. Jerrod Powers was considered one of the big leaders on the field. Now, his first couple of years, he wasn't all that vocal, but starting last offseason, he became kind of a spokesperson for the defense. But we caught on camera him talking, I think it was to Nick Rapone, it was Ross.
Yeah,
Kevin Ross, he was Kevin talking Ross. To, and you know, he tells Powers he needs to get the young guys to focus, and Powers was really, he didn't like the ideas. I'm not really the rah-rah type. I don't like the big brother stuff. And Ross says, you like to win, right? Well, that's stuff you got to do. He's like, you don't have to be rah-rah. You just need to focus on, help them with their focus. Powers, who always could seem to be a vocal leader, maybe it was more on the on-field stuff, the smart things on the field, so he knows what's happening. But we get just a brief moment where he's like, that's not, he really didn't want to do that. He just wanted to play. And maybe that was in part, he probably felt like he was maybe a little bit being pushed out. So, okay, you be this veteran leader. And he probably felt that a little bit as you know, they were getting Justin Bethel a shot in the training camp. He understood, but as a proud player who's performed at a pretty high level, probably didn't sit real well with him because he felt he wanted to be the guy and still should be the guy. That said, it also shows the character as he was there throughout the season and how tight he was with that group.
And then, you know, they went to Detroit. Now, I didn't get a lot from that game itself. I don't know if you did. I mean, we saw how much fun they could have, obviously, in a win. You know, we saw a little bit of the bucket contest before, and I called Drew Stanton's outfit, you know, kind of pimp chic.
I don't know how
else to define that outfit. But I think, you know, overall, the high point of that game is just how much that defense feeds off each other. And when things are going well, and this isn't a bad thing, they're a great front-running team. And they
are.
And it just came in an avalanche of points and plays and things of that nature. And I thought it was really fun to watch, you know, and giving Corey Redding such a hard time for not being able to beat Matt Stafford for the touchdown and things of that nature. But then we went to Pittsburgh, or no, West Virginia, sorry, going towards the Pittsburgh game in the Greenbrier. And I thought that was super eye-opening. I thought it was, you know, maybe one of the more important aspects of it, because you saw the veterans trying to explain the importance of focus and being focused. Then you saw, obviously, I think it was Okafor got hurt in that game against Detroit. And so they brought in,
that's when they brought Freeney in,
bring Dwight Freeney in. And, you know, somebody makes a comment from the couch to the first team pass rush unit and they kind of chuckle at each other, but you could see that the strain or the stress of this situation on the Cardinals brass as well. Like, man, like, this guy's going to be our number one pass rusher. And we literally, like, going into a Week 5 matchup, and we literally just picked him up off the street. Like,
and well, this, the crack it open again, they're during practice, like his first practice there, and you get a, you know, catch. It's fun. It's one of the funnier moments when DJ Humphreys walks up to Dwight and tells him, you know, I did a project in middle school about you. And he's like, what are you doing? Trying to feel old. But then you catch the coaches like, DJ, get out of here. And then, you know, the maturity thing that you heard them talking about, that's the type of thing is what it is. It's like in the middle of practice, he was, you know, he was breaking off a little bit mentally and, you know, walking up to this legend, pass rushing legend, like, hey, you know, I did a project on you in middle school. that was a funny moment, but you kind of got the coaches like, what are you doing over here, DJ?
Yeah, this isn't the time, man. Like, talk about this later. But you could see, and Arians knew what was going on that week. Like, he knew that the focus wasn't there, and you saw it in his reaction to the practices. He was just not happy. And I think, you know, part of it was that he wanted to beat Pittsburgh. I mean, he wanted, no matter how much he tried to play it off on the show, he wanted to beat Pittsburgh. It was important to him to beat Pittsburgh. And I think he over-focused that week while the team under-focused, and then they played tight because they knew how much it meant to the coach, because they saw that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't Bruce Arians. He wasn't having fun. And I think the team kind of fed off of that, and it tightened them up a little bit.
But at the same time, you know, with how things ended in Pittsburgh, when on the on-field stuff, you were able to see just how much. Now, fans were trying to run BA out of town. And you know, I know people, you know, one of the guys I work with, they're the wire sites, is he runs, you know, he's a Steelers fan. And anytime anyone talks about Bruce Arians, he just gets his feathers ruffled and about, you know, he had the 21st ranked offense, so he should have been fired. But you look at how he interacts with people, they all adored him. Big Ben Roethlisberger, we knew about that. But he went and spoke to so many people there on the field, and there was nothing but adoration for him, which tells you the type of person he is. Now, you know, when it comes to politics, and that's a different story. But when you talk about the relationships he builds, he really connects with people. And there are people who genuinely care about him, who even after everything that happened, this is years later. I mean, this is 3 years later that everything had happened.
Yeah, and it still seemed like a fresh wound, didn't it? Like, you could see that the hurt for him in him, and the desire to kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, like, shove it in their face, I guess. So, it was a, you know, I thought there was a lot of funny moments, and that's when I actually decided that Brinson Buckner is my favorite person on this entire series. Like, I don't care. Everything else is, you know, everybody else is secondary. I love Bruce Arians, but Brinson Buckner is hilarious. And
he is. He is.
That made my day.
We've talked about we've kind of gone through first episodes one and two here on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Coming up next on the show, we're going to talk about episode three. We're going to recap a couple of key points on episode two. We're going to keep moving forward. Now we're back on Rise Up Sea Red. As we enter the third one, there's one last piece I want to talk about episode two, is that's when we kind of see, and their season kind of went like that. They started out hot. And then they had two really kind of dumb losses. Those are two games they shouldn't have lost. They shouldn't have lost the Rams, and they shouldn't have lost to Pittsburgh, even though on paper, losing to Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh is no big deal. But when you have the situation where Big Ben's out and then Michael Vick gets hurt, there's no way in the world you should lose to Landry Jones. But you see the formation. So it came easily. They didn't know how to handle adversity during the games. That's the big thing against the Rams thing is once they had something happen that put the game tight, that kind of didn't go it didn't go according to his plan, they couldn't overcome that. And again, against Pittsburgh, the same thing happened. They kind of changed things up, and, you know, they were dominating, absolutely dominating, but they didn't have an answer for Martavis Bryant. And they didn't know how to overcome that. So their season, we talked about this over the season last year, their season went, it was easy. They didn't know how to handle adversity. Then they figured it out. And then they were overcoming adversity almost too much. They'd allow teams to come back into games and then overcome them. Then they got hot again. Then things fell apart. And this was the adversity show for episode two, which leads to, well, episode three, which, well, you get Brinson Buckner on the tirade, episode three, talking about games they shouldn't have lost. You get the message, well, this is where the parking episode comes in, when he talks about parking. We learned that Lawrence Okoye, practice squad guy, got cut, at least the last straw, and I'm guessing, you know, he parked in the wrong spot. And that piece in episode one tied into episode three, and that cut I remember. I was like, huh, wonder why they did that, because frequently it's because of injury. They're hurt, so they get cut and end up on the practice squad injury reserve. But Okoye got cut, and they bring in Olsen Pierre, and it was kind of like, whoa, that's interesting. But to see why, it was because he went to the parking space. Now, that in the internet world has kind of soured BA There are some fans who really kind of think Arians is a prick for doing that. You know, he was just feeding his ego. How I read into that, there were another things. Like, it wasn't just one time he parked there. One, he was late to a meeting. And then two, he was running late, so he parked in a spot where he shouldn't. I don't think he was parking in BA spot. Like you talked about at the very beginning of the show, he was parking either in a handicap spot or he was parking in a season ticket holder spot. But it sounded like, at least reading between the lines, that it wasn't the first time. Plus the comment he's had about, you know, the sort of this entitlement being Olympian type of thing. So there were obviously other things, but to play out, that's a storyline that some people loved and some people really don't like Arians because of it.
And I thought it was just a simple refocus of the team. Like, hey guys, we can't even park in the right spot. Let's get our, you know, crap together. And obviously if this was Bruce Arians, it wasn't crap, but let's get our crap together. And, you know, we can't have these mental errors. And that's what he thought it was. At least to me, he thought it was a mental error that he was just being lazy and he mentally checked out. And I thought that was, one, it's a practice squad player, but two, I thought it was a lesson that needed to be served. Like, hey, let's get our focus back, because this is for real.
And, you know, we're introduced to, this is where we kind of get the character part of Tyrann Mathieu when he goes back to draft day, talking about his second chance. Some of that we already knew. We'd seen the footage from draft day of how he reacted to getting drafted by the Cardinals. But what we didn't see was the phone call that he had with Michael Bidwill just before the pick, where they made it very clear up front before they drafted him, there were two things that had to happen. One, that his signing bonus was going to be a roster bonus, so it was going to be paid in installments. And two, that he was going to have to be drug tested a lot. And Mathieu was like, yeah, thank you for this opportunity. He had no problem with it. But it was interesting to see, because we knew that came out later with the contract, but you know, the Cardinals made it very clear up front that's how that was going to go.
Yeah, and I thought that was good to see. I thought the other interesting part of this episode focused on Arians and what he expects of his coaches. And you know, kind of the quote, I tell my coaches, you know, you miss recital, piano, dance, whatever, football game, basketball game, I'll fire you. And that's something that we see Arians talk about a lot, about how, you know, football is just what you do, but your family is, you know, what you are, and how much he puts the family first. Because, you know, we hear the jokes about coaches leaving at, you know, not leaving till 3 a.m. and then being back at 6 a.m. And who was it? I think it was John Gruden was in it.
Would sleep in his office. Sleep in his
office and stuff. And so I find that amazing, because I think Arians struggles, or not struggles, but struggle to be a head coach. Gave him a vision and ability to see things that others are not able to see, because they're so worried about what's going to happen to them if they fail. Where Arians is like, this is my one and only shot. I don't care. Like, I'm going to do things completely 110% my way. And
what's good about this is this mentality, it's also showing great trust in his coaches. It's like, you guys put the work in you need to, but don't neglect the families. Like, you're going to go do this, but I know that you're going to put all the prep work in so that we're not deficient in anything. And so the hours that he has in it, and that's the attitude that trickles down to the – talk about the stretching whole thing. You know why he doesn't have them stretch as team stretching? Because he expects his players to – be ready when practice starts, instead of losing time, since the NFL rules limit you to a certain amount of time. So they can hit the, you know, as soon as that horn hits, as soon as that horn blows, they're doing reps instead of stretching together. So it's the same type of thing as say, hey, we're going to practice. We're going to do really hard work on our own, and I'm going to give you this time, but I expect you to be prepared.
Exactly. And that's what's important. And, you know, he, like you said, he allows his coaches, and I think that's another thing that you see because of his time and how long it took him to get to where he wanted to be is that he understands that let your coaches coach and you do everything else. Like, you handle the game planning and things of that nature. You know, he focuses so much on the offense, and we saw, you know, spoiler alert, but we saw in episode 7 when he got involved, you know, on the Hail Mary, go get him, like, that didn't work. And, you know, like, it didn't work all game and you're still doing it. So, you know, it's one of those things. And it was, I liked episode 3 because I thought it, again, the beauty of this show isn't just the behind the scenes football aspect. It's the behind the scene family aspect. And, you know, we see a lot of that in episode 3 and the importance of family.
You know, the end of episode 3 is kind of the highlight of the season when we get to the Seattle game. This is really when everything comes together. They figured it out against the Browns. They got down early and then they turned it on. They realized, hey, we can't do this anymore. Boom. They flip the switch. They dominate the rest of the game. And then that continues to roll. That Seattle game was the kind of the turning point of the year to kind of determine what type of team the Cardinals were. They build a big lead. Seattle got back in it, so they had adversity, and they overcame it and then stomped on their throats. You know, that we get the introspective into Mike Iupati, and is, you know, it seemed a little bit, that part didn't, in particular when Mike Iupati went down with the injury during the game, it seemed to me a little bit out of place, but it was an interesting thing to see the perspective of the family and seeing how he got hurt, especially since she wasn't there in Seattle. So she was watching it at home with her kids. And then you see him getting carted off in an ambulance. I felt it didn't fit really well, especially where they were in the particular, and we didn't see anything else with Iupati's family later. It seemed an interesting thing to put there, but in an interesting perspective. But there are a couple of things that I found really fun about that Seattle game. One is the conversation between Bruce Arians and Pete Carroll, both raving about Carson Palmer. Pete Carroll, naturally, he coached Palmer when they were at USC in college, compared him to Nolan Ryan. He's mechanically perfect, and he'll be able to throw a ball forever. And that I kind of think that's, you know, one thing we're going to see. Maybe Carson Palmer can keep playing for as long as his body holds up. The way he throws the ball is perfect. Another thing I saw was, and there were two things in practice leading up to it. They were talking, you caught a couple of things of Michael Floyd. One, tell Floyd Sherman can't cover him. And then another one, Floyd on the sideline telling his coaches, number 26, Kerry Williams, he can't cover me. And we saw he beat both of them. He beat both of them for the touchdowns. Before the game, BA tells Andre Ellington, hey, today's going to be your game. He didn't really play a whole lot, but then at the end of the game, he has that you know, the speed option where the speed draw that he takes for the touchdown. BA goes nuts, Stan goes nuts, and then he tells them, hey, I told you it was going to be your day. And that was kind of the monkey off their back. They found their identity after that win. They found their identity in that win.
Right. And I think it was mostly, and this is my, you know, my perspective, so I don't know, but it was mostly a show of you're actually better than Seattle. So it gave them the belief, you know, the wins in episode 3 against not great teams was nice, but this was, you know, against Seattle, in Seattle on Sunday Night Football. And it was kind of a, you know, a microcosm of their season. Obviously, we wouldn't know that at that point, but it was an interesting microcosm of the season because they got out hot and looked unstoppable, like they were going to just absolutely roll. And then they stumbled and fell flat and even got to the point where they were behind. And then they come roaring back and you know, end up winning by, I think it was 10 or whatever. And, you know, it was a bigger – it wasn't as much of a, you know, win in terms of score as the score had said. It was a much closer game. But, you know –
it was a statement. It was a statement game.
It was. And it was – like I said, it was a microcosm of what their season was you know, obviously up until Carolina, but because it showed that there are ebbs and flows of not only a season, but in a game. And it's not what happens at the top or the bottom, but it's how you respond when each one of those, you know, peaks or valleys happen. And, you know, we saw that response from the Cardinals. Mike Iupati's gone. I mean, they don't have their best offensive lineman, and they're still able to come back and beat a, you know, ferocious, physical, and fast defense just by outgunning them.
Episode four, as we move on to episode four, is the where we get a couple of things. Football-wise, it focuses on the Cincinnati game, but we also get a four. This is actually more people. This is where you get into some more of the inside things. You get the conversation about basketball. That's an entertaining one. Palmer thinks he's one of the top five on the team. And interesting who he's talking. He's talking to the tight end. So he's got Jermaine Gresham, who he's pretty tight with from his days at Cincinnati. Darren Bell's former basketball player. And they're talking trash about who is a good basketball player or not. Patrick Peterson has his baby. They sign Red Bryant. And it's interesting that they choose then to do it, where we learn about their, you know, their pro scouting department and how before the season starts, they put together a ready list. And so they've ranked the players from best to worst of who they should target. And they didn't do that when it came to Freeney. They didn't mention it then. They mentioned it when they go after Red Bryant.
And I think that was because Freeney was more obvious. Red Bryant is a name that, you know, a lot of Cardinals fans probably know. Well, you know, maybe not a lot of Cardinals fans, because there were some dark times when he was good for Seattle. So, but, you know, Cardinals fans should know who Red Bryant is, but a lot of football fans may not know who Red Bryant was before that happened. And so it was a, you know, again, an inside look into how a professional football team works and what the professional scout, we all know about the college scouting, but what a pro team expects and needs out of their professional scouts. And I thought that was really cool.
And you get the sort of the character of Bryant, who jumps on a plane. He's out in the middle of the Texas woods, jumps on a plane, works out on Thanksgiving Day. 30 minutes later, he's in practice. And then the comments, you know, he tells that we hear from Steve Keim. He says, you know, I don't need the money. I want to play because it's the Cardinals. He had the respect of the organization. A couple of things, obviously, there on Thanksgiving. You get to see Patrick Peterson, you know, welcome his baby into the world. Thanksgiving Day, I don't know if it was just for that particular day they chose to do that. You catch Steve Keim walking up to three of the senior assistant coaches. He walks up to Tom Moore, walks up to Larry Zierlein and what is it, Al Sanders.
Yeah.
And tells them, you know, there's extensions on your desk. And it's those three in particular, because they're three. It's not Tom, you know, Tom Pratt still – three of their old guy coaches, just to kind of express, hey, thank you for what you're doing. Then after the Cincinnati game, then we get another tirade about, you know, mistakes, and Arian sends the message, okay, let's show you these clips. Look at this team. They were winning. They lost because they effed up. This game, this game, this game. It's not about making plays. It's about who doesn't boop it up. Don't be the guy to boop it up. And then he points out to Ted Larson. Ted is lucky that clock didn't. There wasn't a 10-second rundown. He wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't have a right guard.
By the way, that exchange and then the result, did that not just tell you how much they were just done with Jonathan Cooper right there? Like they were done. Like Jonathan Cooper had zero chance of getting back into the lineup after that, because if ever there was a time, right? Like you almost lost us one of the biggest games of the year,
but we're going to roll with you.
Yeah. Like we're going to cut you and we wouldn't even know who our right guard is. So.
Oh yeah. That's actually an insight. I didn't know. It was like, no, they wouldn't be Jonathan. No. Ted be gone, and we wouldn't have a right guard. Oh, wait.
Yeah. What about that guy you drafted seventh overall 2 years ago?
And at the same time, you know, I remember that game and wondered initially if Larson intended on doing that to get the penalty against Pecco. Now, we did see on the film, Pecco was clearly a simulated snap count, and he should have been flagged. But it clearly he messed up, and he knew it. And he was a little agitated because it wasn't the scrum of reporters that went to him after the game. It was three different people. There's one guy asked him, and I think then Kyle Odegaard went over him. Then I went over and asked him, and he was clearly annoyed by that point because he was answering the same questions three different times, and he was clearly embarrassed about it. Although Jared Valdir, when I went over, they said it was a grisly veteran move. And I wondered about that. This tells us clearly, no, he just effed up and was really lucky.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reality of the situation. And it created a fantastic situation and, you know, a reality. And then from there, you know, we got the garbage. I don't know. Like what, how do you describe that San Francisco game other than garbage? I mean, that was awful. But the one highlight from that game was Carson Palmer had maybe the worst spike in NFL history celebrating a touchdown.
So falls over.
There was that. But yeah, I mean, and again, we saw Bruce Arians. And, you know, this could be colorful editing and we just don't know it or anything like that. But we saw Bruce Arians know that this game was going to be an issue for his team before it was an issue on that Sunday. We saw him say, this is not a good week of practice. Like that we are not playing well. We are not focused.
There's no such thing as a trap game. We haven't won there since 2008. It's like practically nobody on the team has beaten San Francisco in San Francisco.
Yeah, and he saw it coming, and that's what's crazy to me. And again, it could have been colorful editing to make him seem, you know, like the prophet in that regard. But it's amazing to me how in tune, and you expect that from the head coach, but how in tune the head coach is to his team, not to an individual like a Carson Palmer, but to his team and where they are at mentally for a situation.
Well, and we saw that in two or three other spots where the way they were talking or the things that they showed from the practice and their meeting rooms, they were prepared. They talked about, you know, reading the back shoulder fade against, you know, practicing against that against the Lions. Peterson gets that pick. We see it again in the regular season game where they talk about guarding that, defending the back shoulder fade that the back shoulder throw that Aaron Rodgers did, and it shows, you know, they practice and practice and practice it. And guess what? Bethel got the pick.
They showed the end of the game situation.
They showed the Hail Mary stuff.
Not just that, but remember they showed the end of the game snafus by guys before the Cincinnati game. And again, it could have been colorful editing. It could have, you know, maybe he's not, a prophet, but it seemed like he understood, like, hey, like this is like you guys got to be aware of end of game situations. You know, they showed the Ravens mess up against the Jaguars, and then I can't remember the other one.
Off it was Eli head. Against Dallas.
Dallas, yeah. And
there
and
was so, the one against that they someone sacked Bortles, but got, you know, and then there was one other one.
Yeah, that was the Jags Ravens, and then there was one other one that I can't remember, but.
Brandon Marshall not getting set in the game, ran out of time on the runoff.
Yeah, and that was right before the Cincinnati game. And, you know, like I said, it could have been editing. You know, who knows? It is to be. But it seems like he is so in tune with his team and what they need to hear at the right time and go over at the right time. But he also is in tune with when they're not all there mentally and physically. And you know, I thought the insight into that was really interesting because you have a lot of coaches that put themselves above their team, you know, as I'm the general, I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas Arians is so in tune and into his team that he picks up on those little things.
And, you know, there were a couple of things as well I saw in terms of leadership. We got to see Frosty Rucker as a leadership, as a leader, when he absolutely lays into Kevin Minter on a blown assignment against the Bengals. Then Patrick, you know, this one was publicized during the season after the San Francisco game where they played really badly. I mean, they just played really flat. Patrick Peterson steps in and we say, oh, we'll see on Wednesday. He said, no, whoa, whoa, wait, defense. Tomorrow, 11 o'clock, going over film. For me, that was the sort of the finishing piece of Peterson sort of developing into a polished leader for that. That takes us through episode 4 and one of the finals. So let's see if we can get the last 4 episodes in the final stretch. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we'll talk the last few things and, of course, some of the ins and outs and some of the, outtakes or some interesting things that we saw from there. Talk episode 5. Now we're back on Rise Up Sea Red episode 5. And it is the short week. And this is the, you know, when they decide to put Chris Johnson on injured reserve. Then you've got the Rams game. Which meant a lot to Michael Bidwill. It was his birthday, and it ends up being the final game for the Cardinals to ever play in St. Louis, where they once played before. Meaningful, since he grew up in Missouri. He went to school in St. Louis. Kind of an interesting thing, you know, Larry Fitzgerald dunked Michael Bidwill. I think he's the only one on that team who could have gotten away with that.
Yeah, probably. And you saw the beginning of the emergence of David Johnson, yes. What he would mean to that offense overall. And I thought that was interesting to watch and fun to watch as it kind of unfolded, because I think there's two parts to it. I think that we we overdid David Johnson. When you go back and just look at the rough stats, you know, it was 3 really, really, really good games. And then he was, you know, he had a pretty good game against Green Bay, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like he put up these gaudy numbers and all this stuff.
But he made game-changing plays is what happened.
It was opportunistic plays at the right time that made, you know, turn the tide of games, whether it's game 1 or game 2, or I think it was the
first Green Bay game too as well, with that play in Philadelphia.
And so you saw a lot of that, but you know, a lot of his effort was total yards, total touchdowns type of thing. Obviously until we get to those later weeks where he really, all of a sudden he came on really strong and he showed what he could do. And that's kind of what these 2 episodes were about. Obviously that and that Minnesota game. I felt like the episodes got shorter and shorter in terms of game footage. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
episode 5 most definitely was.
Yeah, because it seemed like a lot of it was focused, obviously, we'll talk about at the end, on the Eagles game and the aftermath, but a lot of it was focused on, you know, the preparation and the things of that nature. You know, the St. Louis game, there wasn't, like you said, the highlight was probably Larry Fitzgerald dunking Michael Bidwill. And then in the Minnesota game, what you saw were the 2 highlights. You saw, obviously, the Larry Fitzgerald pancake block of, I believe it was Captain Munnerlyn.
Yes. On a play where that ball was meant for Fitz to begin with.
Yeah, where Michael Floyd ran a wrong route. Shocking, I know. And then, but Larry Fitzgerald, you know, said, okay, let's go. And, you know, it looked like what we expected out of Jonathan Cooper all those years. Yeah. And so going down the sideline, get lashing on and punishing a defensive back. But then obviously the big thing in that Minnesota game was Dwight Freeney. And, you know, how he talked about setting up his moves and things of that nature. And that, you know, you're not looking to get a sack on every pass rush. but you are looking to set up a future pass rush when you need to get a sack. And we saw that on the final play of the game where, you know, North Turner went Bruce Arians, and instead of just going short and kicking a field goal, he tried to go for it all, and it cost him.
It cost him, yes. And then we got the Philadelphia game, where we see the now we didn't see it so much. We saw it, you get the glimpse of the locker room. Despite winning that game,
there wasn't a lot of smiles.
There weren't. And so when Matthew gets hurt at the end of the game, there weren't a lot of smiles. And it isn't until episode 6 when you really start seeing how it affects the team. Matthew was broken. He was that disappointed. He comes out and says, I wasn't finished showing the world what I have. Arians in tears. Carson Palmer saying there couldn't have been a bigger loss. Just raving about, you know, it was how much he meant to that team and what type of an emotional hit it took that happened. To some extent, it was the same sort of deflating feeling as when Carson went down. Now, after that, you know, in 2014, they treaded water for several games. Drew Stanton did pretty well. But you've got this sort of deflated feeling like, oh no. And they still, and even when Drew Stanton went down, they went up to finish that game. Ryan Lindley finished off the game with a win. But when Ty goes down, things get, you know, they just, the air was let out of their sails a bit. We have the Pro Bowl announcements, and we got a little bit of insight into Larry Fitzgerald. Michael Bidwell makes personal phone calls. It looks like one of the only time he makes personal phone calls to his players. It's to give them the announcement they've made the Pro Bowl. Fitz makes a comment in practice. He made his 9th Pro Bowl. There's basically 2 goals he has left. One more Pro Bowl to get to 10, because the only other receiver to get at least 10 is the great one, Jerry Rice, and to get a ring. You know, that'd be great if we could do that this year.
Yeah, and I think that's his ultimate goal, and you'd love to see him kind of walk away after that. And then, you know, like, we don't want to see him leave, obviously, as Cardinals fans, but as a human, you'd love to see Fitz walk away, 10 Pro Bowls, a Super Bowl, considered to be one of the 5 greatest wide receivers in playoff history, and probably one of the 10 greatest receivers to ever lace them up when all is said and done. And that's special. And, you know, as a Cardinals fan, you know, we don't want to reflect too much, but that, you know, you and I are writing these countdown articles, and there's not a lot of great stuff that you're counting down. No. In Cardinals history. And, you know, I even wrote about it for tomorrow. You know, there's 60 days till the NFL season. 60 is the 3rd most touchdowns in Cardinals history. 60 touchdowns. That's like, that is, and we're not talking Arizona Cardinals history. We're talking Cardinals.
We're talking about over 100 history. Years of history.
Yeah. 60 touchdowns is the 3rd most ever by Sonny Randall, who was a tight end. I mean, that's the history of the Cardinals. And to have a player in your history that comes along like Larry Fitzgerald is, you know, special, because you have a guy like Calvin Johnson, similar history with the Detroit Lions, who was on a similar trajectory and walked away. And so you see that, you know, and that's happened twice in Lions history, obviously with Barry Sanders as well. So you see how fragile it is as a fan to kind of look back at the greatness that you got to experience, even when all the times weren't good, because let's face it, they weren't. So, all right, I'll get off that for now. So.
Well, and then the Seattle game, which was just a fiasco, and we knew going into that.
Oh, you skipped the good Green Bay game.
Oh yes. Let's say there's a there. Well, it was amazing. That was one of those very fun games, which, you know, made everyone think, but there was Fingergate. It's like he played really well. That's part. That was kind of the game that was fool's gold, because Palmer played well with the bad finger. The defense played well with no Tyrann Mathieu, but it's you saw that they talked about two things in practice, is getting after Aaron Rodgers and defending the back shoulder throw, which they did both. We get Dwight Freeney cooking and teaching. And yeah, that's where he talked, you know, as a guy that's followed baseball my whole life, it's the first time I've heard a football player kind of talk like a baseball player. The way Freeney talks about his pass rushing moves is exactly the same way a pitcher tries to set up a hitter later in the count. So he won't, you know, he's not going to his spin move every single time. Now, the reason Freeney can do that is because he's still got speed. So he can still try to push the speed move onto the outside. And once he's beaten him once or twice, or almost beaten once or twice, then he can stick his foot in the ground and make that spin move. And it becomes a thinking man's game, which he's got to do as an old guy, and they're teaching those younger guys to do that. They make the plays, like he says, what is it saying? They make it's so to make the plays before the plays happen, is what he says.
Yep. And from there, you know, like you said, you go on to the Seattle game, and that was, you could tell from Arians on down, like
Betcher was upset during practice.
They tried to make that game important, and they could not get the players to buy in. And if we're being honest, that was the game that should have opened everybody's eyes to, okay, like this team mentally isn't there yet. Like they are not ready yet, because that's the difference between a team like Seattle going into the playoffs in 2013 and 2014 that went to the Super Bowl, and the Arizona Cardinals, who have never, none of those players have ever been there. Like none of these players have ever won 13 games. Like nobody on that team has ever been sitting at 13-2. So they've never experienced that. And you know, Bruce Arians has, and he's telling them, like, guys, you can't just roll into this game and not worry about it, because it doesn't mean anything in the seeding aspect. You have to take this as, we have to win this game. And you can see that it just didn't get through to them. And that's one of those things that it's hard for fans to understand, but it's one of those growing pains that players had to go through, that mentally they were not prepared for the playoffs and what the difference of the playoffs was going to be. And we saw it in Seattle. We obviously saw it in Green Bay, and the Cardinals' talent just won out. And then obviously the last game.
Yeah. Well, and leading into episode 7, one of the things they showed once they got to the postseason, it was a conversation between Tony Jefferson and Rashad Johnson in practice, talking about the bright lights and how it's going to be. Tony Jefferson says, I might be shook on the first play with the lights, and that, you know, if they make it to the Super Bowl. So they're already talking, what if we make the Super Bowl? What if they make the Super Bowl? Now, that's a very human thing to do. But
it also, like I said, it shows the inexperience and the fact that they weren't quite ready for that moment. And that's not a knock on them at all. That's just the reality. When you have, you know, what, two players, three, I guess Mike Iupati's been there too. You know, three players, Corey Redding was there, but it's been, you know, a decade. You know, like when you're talking about three players that have been to that pinnacle before, you know, it's hard to get the young guys to understand what you're going into.
And we get to, this is an interesting thing that I saw there, was we get a look at, well, Harold Goodwin, he gets the interview with Tampa Bay after Lovie Smith is fired. And you kind of get the, you know, Bruce Arians, even when he was an assistant, kind of had his eye on developing coaches. He had, you know, I haven't noticed this with other guys, but with other coaches before, but Arians is actively grooming his coaches for promotions. When he, you know, he was with Arians as his O-line coach when he was offensive coordinator at Pittsburgh. When Arians was fired and he goes and signs with Indianapolis, he said, I'm only going if Goody comes with me. And in fact, he didn't even sign his contract until Goodwin signed his. He comes to Arizona, brings Goodwin to promote him to offensive coordinator. Now this offseason, he's basically handing the offense over to Goodwin for much of the offseason to develop his play calling. He hired Todd Bowles as his defensive coordinator. Why? He knew he was going to be good, and he did it so he'd be a head coach. He's doing the same thing with James Betcher. Took a guy who never had any really coordinated experience. He's putting him in the piece. He sees things in these coaches, and he's extremely loyal to. He's like, okay, I'm going to bring these guys up. Like, whether it's talking about his own legacy or he just sees things in a different way. Carson Palmer talked about how, you know, he's always educating, and he does things that other head coaches don't do. And not offensively, I think it's because he's always been a coordinator, so he sees offense in a different way than everyone else. So he's able to talk about concepts and different things with the defenders, and the defender does this, you've got this option. He's just a brilliant offensive mind, but I think he also sees the future and the potential in certain candidates. And you notice who these are. These are minority candidates, in particular Todd Bowles and Harold Goodwin, guys that he's promoting. And I think Brenston Buckner is kind of next on that list as well.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, you and I have had the conversation off the air. I feel like that might have been his one misstep in the coaching aspect so far was Betcher. But we'll see. I mean, obviously it was his first season, and he had a very successful, you know, statistical first season. But he did when he got matched up with veteran OCs, he did struggle. And you know, we saw that, and so that
he was outdone by Haley, he was outdone by Norv Turner, and he looked, at least on the sideline, there were a couple of things, he looked overwhelmed on the sideline against Carolina, at least in this brief moment that we saw on the sideline
against Carolina, and I felt like against Green Bay and Seattle in those last games, like I felt like he looked like what he was telling the players wasn't what was happening, and that'll be the one thing that's kind of interesting to watch moving forward outside of the turnover on the defensive backfield, because like I said, that camaraderie is tough to build on and to grow, and you saw what they had there, and it was, you know, it was special, but they, you know, Steve Keim isn't in the business of keeping friends together, so
right, that we got to see the very high and the very low when the final two episodes, the overtime win against Green Bay, have some fantastic moments. Calais Campbell talking when he sees the play, what Larry did. He's, you know, that's the 2009 Larry, only Frosty Rick. He says, no, it's the 2016. I gotta have it, Fitz. You've got Christine Arians, and they're like, hold on to the ball, Fitz, hold on to the ball, as he's running down the field. But you see in the locker room, Fitz goes to the ground. He is so just overjoyed. You see Carson emotional for getting the monkey off his back, just elated for getting that first win. We're getting this, and then the end, the very end, you can see Fitz is seeing his mortality as an athlete and the window closing, because you see just the overcome with emotions of happiness after the Green Bay game. And then, spoiler alert, he looked absolutely broken after the Carolina game.
Yeah, and it's not even broken. He looks like
this was like, my chance. This was my chance, like, and I lost
what,
it.
What can I do more? Like, what more do I have to give? And you know, my response to that would be, I don't think there's anything that he has to give more. I think there's others that needed to step up, and they just had bad games, and it was unfortunate that they had a bad game in that game. I guess it would have been better to have it in that game than the Super Bowl, but then, of course, it wouldn't be bad to get to a Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's, you know, 6-1, half a dozen the other, but it was
– Yes.
It's just an interesting end to an unfortunate ride, because, like you said, you saw the raw emotion of of the Cardinals – on that win over Green Bay. And I thought that was what was special about this entire series, is that, you know, you got to see things that you wouldn't normally see. And that's what we saw after that Green Bay game, and just what it meant to Larry Fitzgerald to put the team on his back again and be successful.
Oh, and then the terrible game, the Carolina game. it's, you know, once again, you kind of saw the focus of the week. Stop Cam Newton. You got a tackle, got a block. And, you know, as the game occurred, and I texted you this thing, there was something you could notice that wasn't talked about. What was the absolute focus in that in the national media? It was Carson Palmer's 6 turnovers, his 4 interceptions. His, you know, he went the full Jake DeLome. You know, you don't do the full Jake DeLome. You can't do that. But what was the focus of the show? It was the failure on defense. Kind of giving a little bit of credence to Lamar Wood, a little bit, that, you know, it wasn't Carson Palmer's fault. They don't put it on the shoulders. It was the defense played really, really poorly. And it looked like the whole game, for about the first half and the beginning of the second half, everyone was just waiting for something to happen. They're waiting for something to happen, and it never did. Calais Campbell on the side, come on, we just need one play to spark it. James Betcher, this is the overwhelmed part. And, you know, they're down by a lot, and you hear him on the audio saying, I'm trying to find what will calm us down. And then he swears, like, because he can't do it. Like, he can't figure out what he's got to do or what something game plan. And I think we talked about it long ago. They underestimated those receivers. They game planned, and I think, you know, Betcher maybe outsmarted himself. And kind of like, go back to the Tim Tebow game when they beat the Steelers. The reason the Steelers lost to Tim Tebow is because they said, all right, this guy can't throw a football down the field. And he beat him on a couple of big throws. They focused on stopping the running game in Cam Newton so much and said, there's no way that those guys can beat us. And then the secondary took them for granted because the secondary played so poorly. Rashad Johnson on that big play to Philly Brown on that 86-yard touchdown. You know, my legs just died on me. And I wondered if that play right there basically ended his Cardinals tenure.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, you know, that was the unfortunate reality, is that it came back to you saw snippets of why everybody was let go, whether it be Rashad Johnson, whether it be Jerod Powers. You know, you saw why they were looking to upgrade on the offensive line. I mean, all of that was shown throughout the series, and it all kind of came to a head right at the end, at the worst possible part, and in the worst possible time. And that's just, you know, that unfortunately that happens to teams, and to the Cardinals, it just happened to happen in the biggest game of their, you know, a lot of these guys' lives.
And, you know, then it points to, there's a couple of things after that. And in particular, you see the running back room with Stump Mitchell. He tells Chris Johnson, we want you back. The team's going to be in contact with your agents. And then he tells him, you know, I think if you don't go down, I think if you don't get hurt, we win it all. That seems kind of simplistic. But I think having Chris Johnson and a David Johnson, perhaps it creates that steadiness. Then he turns to David Johnson and in the end of things, he told him, Stump tells him now whether this is true or not. And maybe this is why BA brought up Johnson's name in the third round when they were totally in on Abdul. Stump Mitchell tells David Johnson, you know, you were the guy I wanted over everyone. I wanted to, you know, I wanted you over Gurley. Interesting thing to say. Then he says, you know, there's no way that you're going to, if you stay healthy, you're going to be in Canton. I've coached some really good running backs. I had to go back and look at who's he coached. He's coached Sean Alexander, Ricky Waters, Clinton Portis. He's, you know, some of the running backs who play at the highest level. And he's saying he's better than them, because none of those guys are maybe Clinton Portis perhaps will be in the Hall of Fame conversation. I don't think he will be. But you're taking a guy who's coached some of the best backs in football when they were in their prime, and he's telling David Johnson, you stay healthy, you're Hall of Fame, and there's no way that you won't be. And then, you know, Chris Johnson, we see him coming back. You know, you see the heartbreak, but then Bruce Arians and Calais Campbell saying, you know, we'll be back, and Calais says, yes, we will. And talking about the next step, that it gives you hope. But you just see how, you know, the saddest moment here is this, the brief 3 seconds you see Larry Fitzgerald in his locker room, and he looks like he is just absolutely, you know, to me, he looked broken. And, you know, Patrick Peterson comes over and he won't even show his face. He's just complete sadness. The next day, he's got his hoodie on, dark glasses on in the meeting. And then in the, they caught a glimpse of in the receiver room with Daryl Drake. And you can tell he's like, oh, we missed out. We missed out on this. It might have been our best chance.
Yeah, and it was such a heartbreaking end to an amazing look. But I think that says a lot about the entirety of it, is that it was so heartbreaking because it engaged you and it made you care about all of that for so much and so long. So, you know, overall, very well done by Amazon NFL Films to create such an engaging and fun show. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the all or nothing was nothing for the Arizona Cardinals.
And that was the message at the end. And now we've heard that NFL Films is looking forward to a season two, whether that's going to be a Cardinals. I think it would be a perfect way to follow up this season, is to follow the Cardinals again and see if they can kind of go through it. A couple of things that we learned after the fact: quarterbacks wouldn't let the cameras in the meeting room. I wish they'd have done that. Keith Crossrow, the coordinating producer, said that the receivers were kind of shy. And we noticed that. They never, you know, there's never any features about Fitz or Michael Floyd or John Brown or really anyone. And so there were a few characters that we missed. A couple of, you know, I wanted to point out a couple of factual things. I found it really interesting when they focused on Lyle Sendline. And they talked about a couple of times of not having a long-term contract. And I stopped. I'm like, what? The John Hamm mentions it in the narration. His wife mentions it. Lyle Sendline signed a 5-year contract in 2011. That's about as long term as you get. Now, it wasn't the richest contract, but a 5-year deal. That's a factual error. He did have a long term contract. The other one is way back at the beginning with Michael Bidwell talking about how the Cardinals came. Well, how his family came to own the Cardinals. Now, maybe it's just kind of the story, but his story doesn't match up what you find on the internet, which I believe, you know, he says it was a matter of, you know, his grandpa, you know, Charlie Bidwell, was a part owner in the Bears, and he wanted to have his own team. Hollis wasn't going to sell it to him, but there was this dentist with the Cardinals, Chicago Cardinals, that was losing money. And so he invited a dinner party on the yacht, get them all a little bit liquored up, and, you know, $5,000 cash, and he sold the team. The story actually, you know, according to Wikipedia, which is according to some other things, say actually it was a $50,000 agreement with $2,000 that changed hands that night. So maybe that is an embellished story that they've given, you know, the kids to tell for the stories. But those were the only two things that stood out to me as, wait, that's just not necessarily right. Any other things that stood out to you? There were definitely some funny moments. A.Q. Shipley in Greenbrier wearing a Tyrannosaurus Rex shirt saying T-Rex doesn't like to do push-ups, knowing that A.Q. has the short arms. I found that incredibly funny. Just that I caught as a moment because he didn't even talk. It was just, there he goes walking by with his bags. He's got a T-Rex hates doing push-up shirt on. I laughed.
Yeah, I like the insight to all the guys and how much fun they had with themselves and how light they took themselves.
Anything else that you know, we've been on forever, so it's a long show. We've been talking all about all or nothing, but anything else? I mean, was there anything missing for you from that show, from the series?
You know, overall, I can't say too much. I mean, you missed on, I would have liked to see more preseason, but they said they didn't want to make it like Hard Knocks and Cuts. And I would have liked to have seen more of the off-season, like decision-making type stuff. You know, the insight into just that one, you know, those two picks was fascinating. So I think getting a little more of that would have been great.
Or perhaps seeing the first round one, what led them to DJ, you know, I would have loved to see who they wanted for real in round one.
Yeah, they weren't going to release that.
Well, that's about it. I think we're at the end of a long episode talking all or nothing. We'll be back over the next couple of weeks as we're getting gear up for training camp. I think we might do a show next week, kind of break up our training camp previews into a couple of shows. So be on the listening for that. Of course, you know where to find us. That's Seth Cox. I'm at RevengeTheBirds.com and NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm Jess Root for CardsWire.com. And this is the Rise Up Red, Rise Up C, I can't forget the name right, the Rise Up C Red Podcast. We'll catch you again in a week or two.
Have a good night, everybody.